cries out, when from the right breast the mother takes it away, in the very next moment to find in the left one its consolation. So when I go from hence, let this be my parting word, that which I have seen is unsurpassable. I have tasted of the hidden honey of this lotus that expands on the ocean of light, and so I am blessed. Let this be my parting word. In this playhouse of infinite form, I have had my play, and here I have caught sight of him that is formless. My whole body and my limbs have thrilled with his touch, who is beyond touch. And if the end comes here, let it come. Let this be my parting word. So this is the experience of divine consciousness. And this too, according to those who have walked the way of the wizard, this too is not the end. There is yet more to experience on the way of the wizard. The seer finally gives birth to the spirit. It's not just mere divine consciousness anymore. The spirit is here, is beginning to merge with the spirit in everything that exists in creation. So when the spirit in the individual body begins to merge with the animating force of life, psychologically, experientially, in consciousness, with the animating force of life everywhere, then there is no distinction between the seer and the scenery anymore. There's complete merging between the lover and the beloved, between the seer and the scenery, between the creator and the created and the created. Complete merging. That's unity consciousness. Listen to what Saint Augustine has to say about this experience. He says, "And behold, you were within me, and I out of myself, and there I searched for you." Listen to what the book of Moses says. "And God said unto Moses, I am that I am." The universe has become my body. I have a personal body, but I have a universal body. And they're both equally mine, because the real me is non-local. Now I've gone beyond miracles. In cosmic consciousness, there was the experience of miracles. In divine consciousness, there was the creation of miracles. And now there's no need for miracles, because everything is a miracle. The fact that we are here is a miracle. The fact that I breathe is a miracle. The fact that there are colors and textures and forms and music and sound and tastes and smell is a miracle. No longer am I caught in the clutches of rationality. I have gone beyond that to experience the universe as my body. It's a return, in a sense, to the state of innocence, but a different kind of innocence. The first kind of innocence was out of ignorance. And this new innocence is the same innocence, but with a knowingness, a wisdom, a conquest of even the experience of mortality. T.S. Eliot, "We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of our exploring is to arrive at the place we started from and know the place for the first time." So it's a return to this ocean of pure consciousness from where we started in the first place and merge with it. Listen to what Rumi says. "Behold the body born of dust, how perfect it has become. Why should you fear its end? When were you ever made less by dying? When you pass beyond this human form, no doubt you will become an angel and soar through the heavens. But don't stop there. Even heavenly bodies grow old. Pass again from the heavenly realm and plunge into the vast ocean of consciousness. Let the drop of water that is you become 100 mighty seas. But do not think that the drop alone becomes the ocean. The ocean too becomes the drop." So, and in another place he says, "Let the waters settle, you will see stars and moon mirrored in your being." This is the miracle of unity consciousness. The cosmos is my body. And it's equally mine. It's as much as my personal body. It's sacred. It is that responsibility that is being thrust upon us in this, what we started out by saying was metabiological evolution. We are a privileged species on planet Earth because we are the only species that has a nervous system that is capable of becoming aware that we are aware. We are conscious of the fact that we are conscious. And just like our flight-fright response, our flight-fight response gave rise to a predator psychology which was useful in a certain phase of our evolution, this new way of the wizard, this new metabiological evolution is necessary for us because the universe has chosen us to take care of it. We are a privileged species. Are we up to the responsibility? Are we up to the responsibility of guaranteeing the sacredness, the beauty, the grandeur of this universe that we are a part of? We can only do that if we really seriously embark ourselves on the way of the wizard to bring about the ultimate experience of unity consciousness, which is really the experience of love. Love not as a mere emotion, love not as a mere sentiment, but love as the ultimate truth at the heart of creation. Love as the experiential knowledge that you and me are not only made up of the same stuff, but that we are the same being in different disguises. And that when that recognition comes, then the spirit says, I am the universe. In Sanskrit, Aham Brahmasmi. In the Judeo-Christian traditions, Abraham, Abraham, the primordial human. In Islam, Anal Haq, I am the universe. I am totality, I am beauty, I am grandeur, I am infinity, I am bliss. That's the experience. So, in the end, I'd just like to say that this is really all about love. Love is the merging of the spirit with the spirit. I'd like to end the session. I'm very grateful for you all to be here, to give me this opportunity to talk to you. And I'd like to summarize it, finally, with a little poem from the great Sufi poet Rumi once again, who said, wherever you are and in every circumstance, try always to be a lover, and a passionate lover. Once you have possessed love, you will remain a lover in the tomb on the day of resurrection, in paradise, and forever. And if you have not been a lover, count not your life as lived. On the day of reckoning, it will not be counted. Thank you.
I'd ordered a tape on the Wilderness Conference, and when I received it, I thought it was so well done that I wanted to share it. And I wrote to the man who spoke about it. His name is George Hunt, and he happened to get into this Wilderness Conference in Denver, Colorado, and taped it. And the tape here today is an interview on his experience. But he explains so well how the Wilderness Conference, the environmental movement, is tied into the banking movement that it makes it more clear, at least to me, and maybe I hope to you. But the man is, he wrote back to me. I wrote to him and asked for some material. I thought I would write an article on summarizing the information. And he sent me a lot of information and said, and another tape, and said that he would be here March 30th, 31st in California, and if we could get together a group, that he would be willing to come and speak with us.
It was just a few months ago that a friend in Texas fought.
So after you see the tape, we'll kind of get your idea of whether you'd like to have him come and talk with us. The second tape is on the conference in Brazil in 1992. And I thought maybe we shouldn't look at that just yet in case we want him to come and explain it to us.
His name's George
Hunt. It's about an hour, about an hour. George Hunt.
It was just a few months ago that a friend in Texas forwarded a cassette tape to my attention with a brief note saying, Brother Wheeling, I think you should listen to this talk show program Alan Dale of KRNN, is that correct?
That's right.
In San Antonio, Texas, interviewed George Hunt last October.
In October of 1987.
October of 1987. There were two interviews about a week apart. Alan Dale had been sent a tape from a friend who heard a talk show program in Denver.
That's right.
Where you were being interviewed. Right away made contact with George, invited him to be on the program, and some very interesting things began to occur. In the one-week interval between the two interviews with George Hunt, he received a threatening phone call saying that if you bring George Hunt on the air again, you'll live to regret it. Words
That's
to that
right.
effect. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks after the second interview, the station was bought out, and Alan Dale lost his job and went elsewhere for employment. We have good reason to believe that when George Hunt arrived here in Birmingham, Alabama last evening, that he was being shadowed. We have good reason to believe that. After you hear the subject, the presentation this evening, I think you will appreciate that people in high places may be disturbed by the information, the knowledge that he has, that God has given to him, information that he feels compelled by the Holy Spirit to share with Americans, with Christians, with anyone anywhere who will listen. Am I speaking correctly here?
Including denominational church entities.
Yes. I'm particularly interested in the things Mr. Hunt is going to share, because for several years I have been studying the prophecies of Old and New Testament that point to some final crisis in the world, even in the United States of America, a crisis that will be tied to economics, to money.
I had lost my middle son, Peter, in one of the wilderness areas, as a matter of fact, that's going to go into this World Bank that we're going to be hearing. He was killed on the Franz Josef Glacier about a year earlier in New Zealand. And I was feeling pretty blue. It was about the anniversary of his death, and I was watching public television one night about 10 p.m., and it said, Fourth World Wilderness Congress is coming to Denver, and it showed pictures of reindeer and pictures of the Arctic. And I said, aha, John told me a week ago that he wanted to go to the Arctic. I ought to go to that Congress, rub shoulders with the forest rangers, and see what I can do about procuring my son a job. That's kind of on a father's heart. So I learned that it was very expensive to go to this particular Congress, and I did not happen to have that kind of money to just throw around. So I made some phone calls to find out if I could help. And it turns out that one of the people that was going to be an official host at the Congress was ill with the flu. I called that person and said, may I take your place? And he said, I would appreciate it very much. I am too sick to show up tomorrow, and the guests are going to be flying into Denver, and somebody has to pick up these dignitaries, and why not you? And so I showed up the next morning in his stead, and my fellow hosts were the emissaries of divine light, an ashram out of Loveland, Colorado. I was uniquely suited to understand the conspiracy, and I will use the word conspiracy. That is, people whispering together in a covert connection to do some dirty work against the United States and against Jesus Christ and against his people, as we will hear this evening. I was uniquely suited because I have taught accounting at a college level. I have taught business management at a college level. I have 25 years of business experience, and for the last 19 years, I have been engaged as an entrepreneur of my own business called Medical Resources in going into businesses, analyzing their businesses, and seeing what is wrong with them, and being able to take all of these variables that I see in this business and come out with conclusions that are correct for their business, to save their business. In other words, I'm a business doctor. So when I heard the undertones and the nuances and the double entendres that were going on in the speeches at this Congress, I knew that there was a conspiracy where others might have just had the words pass over their head. Something here that was not true, because conservation is an antipathy with growth and development. They are mutually exclusive, as we have learned. Then when I saw the World Bankers at the Congress, and the UN Undersecretary Generals, and the Secretary General, who I had dinner with one night, and the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, and the Secretaries of the Treasury and so on, I said to myself, why are they suddenly interested in conservation? The World Bankers are the ones that have destroyed the rainforest down in Brazil. If you look at the history of the World Bank under Robert S. McNamara, he's the one that designed the Vietnam War. He left the Vietnam War in 1967 and went over to World Bankdom, where he became the president. He set up massive loans that were given without the permission of the American people. There was a token rubber stamp for these massive loans to go out of our world banking system into the hands of Brazil and Mexico and the Latin America countries, and we don't know really how those monies were spent. One project that the monies were spent on in Brazil was a large highway connecting the inner parts of Brazil with the coast, and that highway still does not function properly, from what I understand, because it was designed poorly, and it floods when the rains come, and so it's not dependable. Billions of money were spent on that. Billions were spent on dams that don't work. Rainforests were slashed down and ruined, and our oxygen generating areas of the world were decimated by the very people that were saying that they wanted to save our ecology, save our biospheres, and keep the world safe for mankind.
When you were invited to be a host, did you receive advance information about who the dignitaries were that would be present?
No. I had no idea that those dignitaries were going to be there. All I knew was there were going to be people representing the interests of reindeer and the Arctic, where I wanted to get my son a job. When I got there, the first night that I was invited to the opening party that they had, and I noticed one of the name tags waiting for someone to pick it up was Eddie Rothschild. And I said, Rothschild? I wonder if the Rothschilds are here. And then that's when I checked the materials that were given to me, the registration packet, which contained booklets like this. This is our common future, by the way, according to the world elite. The people that are going to control the one world religion coming out of this, the one world banking system, the one world government, also have in mind that our common future is like these poor Ethiopians who have been turned against by their very own government. So they passed out these booklets. These are the lands that we're going to be losing to this bank. I'll get into that now. But there were about 1,500 people, and then we went up to Estes Park after 3 days in Denver for 4 days of shirt sleeve sessions. All right. Well, under Robert S. McNamara's leadership in the 1960s, an amassing of today $1.1 trillion in debt and accrued interest that cannot be paid back, most of which cannot be paid back by these poor little third world countries, has accumulated. $400 billion of this, according to David Rockefeller, he says that nearly $400 billion in debt is owed to a number of commercial banks, including his own bank, the Chase Manhattan. And according to the Brazilian with whom I spoke there, who is very, who confided with me with the Brazilian situation, there is no way that they can pay these back. These loans are uncollectible. Now, most of this money is owed to the United States banking system. We have $150 billion in equity in our banks that can absorb the shock of the first $150 billion that is written off. And after that first $150 billion is written off, Charles, the next $750 billion is going to come out of the depositors' hands in the banks, because the bank equity cannot handle those losses. So we have been propelled by the World Bank in our United States economy here. that either way we lose. If we do not have a World Conservation Bank established as a result of this Congress that I went to, that will take out this debt and refinance it using the world's wilderness lands as collateral, and we'll get into that. If we do not have this World Conservation Bank, our U.S. economy will collapse. We are at the point of collapse now. The banking authorities that investigate banks are hammering our United States banks right now and saying, you have to write off this debt. This is uncollectible. The loans have gone into non-accrual, and the countries have already admitted that they cannot repay, and you have to write this debt off. They can't write the debt off, or we will go into financial collapse. Either way, you lose. They plan to create a super world bank that's going to absorb all the debts that the World Bank has created, and then from a basis. Every bank has to have capitalization. Now, it might be the equity that people that start the bank pump into the bank and say, here's $100,000 from me and $100,000 from this guy, and let's then loan it out and get this bank going. Well, the collateral in this bank is going to be the 34% of the Earth's surface, the Earth's land surface. Michael Sweetman, who is designated by Edmund de Rothschild as the World Conservation Bank president. I had lunch with Michael, and I said, Michael, I have analyzed what I've heard in this Congress up to this point, and at this point, I cannot see how this bank can survive, because I, as an accountant, always look for an earnings engine in the capital statement, in the capitalization of the bank, something that's going to produce interest, dividends, earnings to keep the bank running and pay the employees and so on, and I don't see it in this bank. I see collateralization coming from worthless wilderness lands, and that's why they're wilderness lands, because nobody can get any economic order out of it. What's going on, Michael? And he said, we're working on that. I said, you don't have an answer as to how this bank is going to survive, and you're going to the IMF World Bank Congress at the end of this month? I had luncheon with Michael Sweetman and Baron and Mrs. Rothschild. I laid out my fears to the table at which I was sitting, and I received confirmation from a World Bank authority, who I cannot say. I cannot say their name, but they confirmed that my suspicions were correct. The United States is going to go down the tubes very shortly. When? Would you put on that tape by John D. Rockefeller IV, February 1st,
1988? I don't know what's going to happen in 1988, but I do know in 1988 that we've got to lay our base for either this year or surely for next year. Because all of those people who are out there running for president are making the largest mistake of their personal and professional lives, because when one of them gets inaugurated in 1989, all of the chickens are coming home to roost. And it is going to be an extraordinary year of reckoning. A reckoning in terms of the budget process, of bold action. It'll be the time for it, because it'll be a new administration, and all kinds of old habits are going to have to go out the window if we are to survive as a nation. And I believe, it's that serious, and you know it.
We have the only dollar that's worth anything, is what Rothschild is going to tell the United States economists. Our World Conservation Dollar is the only dollar that's worth anything, because it's the only one that's capitalized and it has value behind it. But you know, as of this meeting, that there's no value in wilderness lands, and you also know at this meeting that there is no earnings engine in the World Conservation Bank. In other words, it is a fraudulent bank. Remember when Esau said to Jacob, I'm really hungry, and I want some of that pottage that you have there. And Jacob said, will you give me your birthright for it? And that was the first known swap. That was a counter-trade transaction. And through counter-trade, Rothschild and his bevy of bankers are going to debt swap and counter-trade the United States, every one of us, every city, every town, every state, every bit of wealth is going to be counter-traded out of the country into the Royal Bank of Canada, which is the collection basin for the American swapping activities. They're going to come along and say, you can't pay your mortgage and you're down on your knees and you're going to lose your farm? Here, take a World Conservation Bank loan. Five years before the first payment, and the payments are low and it's only 3% interest, and you'll be helping Mother Earth. And that's another aspect of this thing. It's going to be a religious pride thing. Hitler came along and was touting the Fatherland. Well, we're going to hear something even bigger than that. These guys are going to sell this World Conservation Bank as something that is helping Gaia. Mother Earth, because there's a Mother Earth religious cult coming out of this thing too.
You do not have a wilderness Congress and suddenly discover James Baker, who is the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States of America, Mr. David Rockefeller, who has been rather out of the news for the last 2 or 3 years, but suddenly appears at a wilderness Congress, Mr. Rothschild, one of the foremost bankers of the world, appears there. What I hear you saying is it's a big cover for a plan to save the wealth of the wealthy. Is that what's going on here? Is it that the powerful people in the world, beyond any philanthropic feelings or motives they might have, is it that the powerful, wealthy people of the world have designed a plan that will save their wealth and power? Is that what I hear you say?
Yes, the World Conservation Bank is going to be the decoupling mechanism for the wealthy to disengage themselves from capitalism and go to the back of the bank, so to speak, and become the creditors of the bank and then wind up as the world's dictators. Thank you, Charles Wheeling of Countdown Ministries, for this valuable interview. Brothers and sisters, this information you are viewing is factual. The World Conservation Bank scheme can unfold in different ways, but all paths lead to the collectivization of the world's people into a dictatorship by the elite. When the United States-Canadian Free Trade Agreement was signed, the World Conservation Bank was formally put into second gear, as instructions to the country's treasuries were embedded in the agreement to pursue the possibility of establishing this bank. Debt for nature and debt for conservation swaps are already being carried out in Ecuador and other countries, so things are rolling. And now to the next part, currency matters. Soft currencies can be created by this bank and converted into hard currencies, and that is, we can be debt swapped by Brazil and the people that control Brazil against our what we have left in our treasuries, which isn't very much. They'll take soft currency created by an enactment and trade it for goods and services out of the United States, pay us in the soft currency, and the soft currency then will become de facto hard currency in the United States, creating terrific inflation for us. We now have a world currency dollar that's under the manipulation of the Rothschilds because, as you probably know, the Rothschild family sets the price of gold in London. And now the price of gold will be a determinant on the value of currencies. The Rothschild family also owns the Eastern oil, and the Rockefellers own the Western oil, and oil will be a determinant in this basket of goods in the new currency system. So we have families now that are controlling our currency, and the Rothschild said 150 years ago, whoever controls the currency of the country controls the wealth of the people and therefore controls the people.
The economy here will collapse. It's only a matter of time, and it's a matter of design.
Mm-hmm.
This gentleman finally, after some lengthy discussion, said, I'm Canadian. I'm on assignment over here on your side of the border. I work for the Canadian Treasury. There's new money, you know. We have it all printed. It's in the vaults and in warehouses in Canada.
No, Canada.
I'm trying to put all of this conversation together with what I'm hearing you say here this evening.
The Royal Bank of Canada, perhaps?
He simply said, this gentleman told me that Americans did not have the expertise nor experience to print colored currency, that this was being printed by contract in Canada, had been printed, and is presently being held in large warehouses, awaiting the proper time for distribution.
The next thing we're going to listen to is Baron Edmund de Rothschild. Well, this is going to be called the new Magna Carta, too, this World Bank program. All these enactments are going to be given the title of the new Magna Carta. In the old Magna Carta, it gave baronial rights, land rights, to barons in England. And in the new Magna Carta, it's going to be given baronial land rights to the world for Baron Edmund de Rothschild. We're going to hear him now announce the creation of the International World Conservation Bank enactments, which will include a second Marshall Plan. That's what's going to bail us out here in the United States. It's going to include a third world debt relief, and it's going to include a new world currency system. Let's hear Baron Edmund de Rothschild.
But perhaps this conference might like to think more about the Marshall Plan, which had been mooted and put forward very tentatively at the Denver conference. And perhaps this might be the keynote of what you have heard today and what perhaps you might like, in some perhaps amended form, to have put forward. At this conference, recognizing the need to protect our ecological and environmental heritage within the concept of the World Wilderness Congress, World Wildlife Fund, and all other bodies involved in the preservation of life on our planet, ask the Prime Minister of Norway, Right Honourable the Gro Harlem Brundtland, as one of the world's leaders of a greatly respected community, to be the promoter of this International Conservation Bank. By her Brundtland Report, which has been widely circulated to world leaders, she could follow up this report with the recommendations to promote a second Marshall Plan, the third world debt relief, and finance for a stable development.
That's it, folks. Those three pronouncements have set in motion a one world economic system, with the United Nations becoming the legislative Congress, the Royal Bank of Canada being the banker, the Federal Reserve of the world, and the dictators of the world being that hub of people in London. London is the creator of the ills of mankind, I have learned, and the Commonwealth countries are the ones that have done us in.
Some people might wonder why, if it's a matter of public record, people don't catch on to what's going on. And the problem is that the finances that are involved in all these balance sheets are so astronomical that people don't understand. And you have reporters that sit through these sessions, and Rothschild speaks and he says, well, then this must be the best for us. And they don't understand what's involved in these financial transactions, and by the time we do understand, it's going to be too late. And that's why they can make it a matter of public record.
Have any of the American businessmen in the United States have caught on to this, or there's nothing they could do, or are they just pawns under the Rockefeller system?
They're pawns under the Rockefeller system. David Rockefeller addressed the Council of Foreign Relations of Denver on Monday. He spoke on Sunday at the Congress, addressed the Council of Foreign Relations in Denver on Monday. Most of the world industrial leaders are represented in the Congress, in the Council of Foreign Relations, which is a group of people that have sworn allegiance to the Babylonian money system that we have in the U.S., and they'll go along with anything that happens.
There are very close
unquestionably
ties, very close ties between the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Trilateral Commission.
Yes.
And the historic plans and ideals of the Illuminati.
Exactly.
These are facts.
I personally believe that the old money system that we have, that we carry around right now in our billfold and in our pockets and purses, is going to be recalled, as they recalled the francs after World War II. They recalled the old money and issued new money. This is going to shake out a lot of coke dealers that are stashing money aside. People are going to, the only way that they can get a new medium of exchange is to turn in all of their valuables and get it converted into new money. Old money will become verboten. I wouldn't think so. The store of value, I'd like to have silver and gold stashed away somewhere in a little hole in the ground. And I imagine if Caesar, I'd be inclined to want to disobey Caesar and have my little stash of silver and gold. But, you know, then you think about, well, now what if Joseph, Jesus' father in the flesh, the temporary custodian of Jesus, would have had that kind of mentality? He probably wouldn't have gone to Bethlehem to pay his taxes, okay? and he would have then violated God's laws, and things would have come out differently. So I choose to obey the laws of the land as they stand, as long as they don't violate my conscience. I found out that there is a blessing in obeying your authorities, as I learned at the Congress. It gave me a ticket to ride to be able to tell you all of this information because I obeyed my authorities.
Good point. Now,
Harry Schultz describes it in his international newsletter. Here is what he says. My research and development indicates Japan is going to turn an already negative outlook into something bordering on horrendous. Tokyo may turn a bad global bear market into panic and depression. Tokyo is going to pop, according to this fellow. Their economy is so inflated, and they are so fragile in Japan, that they are the one that's going to set off the world panic, according to this chap. A person asked me, what about these people on government checks, Social Security? Well, all those things are going to be wiped out. All of your savings are going to be wiped out. Silver and gold is not going to save you. You're going to be either dependent upon the World Conservation Bank and the goodness of its officers to provide you with the living you need to sustain your life, or you are going to trust in the Lord Jesus Christ to sustain you. And that's going to be the decision. People are going to fish or cut bait onto whether they are going to worship the Lord Jesus Christ or not. Period. I mean, this is a spiritual dilemma that people are going to be put into. The bank really isn't going to be receiving real money from Brazil and so on, but they'll have the appearance of bringing it in. And then when the bank goes bankrupt, all of the mortgages of the world, which have been turned into the bank and counter-traded and debt-swapped, people haven't been able to make the mortgages on their Alabama savings and loan mortgage, so they have debt-swapped their Alabama savings and loan mortgage for a World Conservation Bank mortgage. The World Conservation Bank, to put it succinctly, is going to own mortgages on all of the wealth of nations throughout the whole world. And when the bank goes bankrupt, the creditors of the bank, as is done in international law, will move into the bank and take over its operation and will take all accounts receivable owed to that bank, which are your mortgages and my mortgage and the wealth of nations. The cities won't be able to pay their debts. They're going to get deeper and deeper into debt to the World Conservation Bank, so they'll own New York City, they'll own Boulder, Colorado, they'll own Birmingham, Alabama. And the creditors will move in and take over all of those mortgages, and the very wealthy, the wealthy elite of the world, will have counter-traded bad world conservation dollars in for the claims on the real wealth of nations. And when the bank goes bankrupt, we will wind up serving the people who are capitalists today.
People who pull the strings.
The people who pull the strings. The World Conservation Bank will be used as a decoupling mechanism for the capitalists to become socialists. It's a dirty trick. We've got now the weird experience of listening to David Lang, personal friend of I. Michael Sweetman, who is a superb elitist who says that the cannon fodder doesn't really need to get involved in this bank. Let's play that.
When the auditor finally gets his hands into the balance sheet. I suggest, therefore, that this be sold not through a democratic process. That would take too long and devour far too much of the funds to educate the cannon fodder, unfortunately, which populates the earth. We have to take almost an elitist program that we can see beyond our swollen bellies and look to the future in time frames and in results, which are not easily understood or which can be, with intellectual honesty, be reduced down to some kind of simplistic definition.
Okay, and if you go up to 212... David Lang is speaking again. He wants to set up a fraudulent situation to create currency to help the developed countries seem to be paying off their loans. Go ahead.
Initial capital base, so that the income in local currencies from that capital base could be used without encroaching on capital. Those obviously are very high ideals, and maybe they're not realizable. But I fear that if you don't strive for that as your objective, all the good work all the good wishes and all the good money will very quickly come to nothing. Thank you.
Okay. Now, the reason, what he said there is you have a capital base that the bank creates wealth from all of these world wilderness lands, and that is the capital base that the countries use to for their currency and to get the countries running again. And then he wants to create additional currency beyond the capital base in the amount of the interest and loans that will have to be paid off by these countries to give the bank an appearance of profitability. But it won't be profitable. I know it's obscure and esoteric, but I was able to catch on to that. And nobody there really caught on to it. I spoke to one of the reporters of a large newspaper. I was sitting with him, and I said, "Have you caught on yet of what's really going on at this Congress?" And he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Don't you realize that there is a one world dollar that's being set up right in front of us?" He said, "No, I've missed it." So I explained to him using accounting T accounts to show the capitalization of the bank and how currencies are going to be created. And he said, "Is that really going on?" Well, I saw him a few weeks ago, and he still really couldn't figure it out. It is very difficult to figure out the riddles and deals that they're setting up in this world system. They don't realize that God has known these schemes from the foundation of the world.